Our show today is about a bad guy turned good. A former gangster, drug dealer, pimp, mob enforcer, pornographer, and author. His book, The Pimp Game, Instructional Guide, has been featured on National Geographic series Trafficking and is used by the FBI to train agents. With 30 years of insider experience in this trade, Mickey Royal now wants to educate audiences about avoiding crime and criminals. It's a pleasure to have you listening to my show today. My sincerest desire is for you to get something from it that will make your life richer, fuller, and safer. My name is Reverend Wynn Henderson. As an ordained Christian minister and a retired medical doctor, I have a dual perspective to bring you content to solve problems in your life. This podcast is the longest-running, single-hosted, spiritually-based radio internet talk show in America. It's been on the air for over 20 years. I bring you information about the disease of addiction, purpose in life, and investigative reporting on truth just below the surface. Mickey, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Oh, it's my privilege and my pleasure. Thank you.
Maybe since you know your life better than I do, you might let our audience know where you started and how you got to where you're at now.
Oh, that's quite a story. I'm going to try to keep it short as possible, but I became a career criminal from age 13 to about age 40, 41, maybe right there. And it was a gradual ascend or descend, depending on which part of the spectrum that you're looking and how you're judging. But it's been quite a journey.
And I listed a number of things that you did back when you were a bad guy. What's the overall takeaway from those days, if you were advising people, especially young people, about any or all of those things, what would you say about that?
Well, if I were advising young people, I would try to stay away from the cliche, you know, the simple don't do it, it's not going to do this, that, and the other. No, not really. I try to, if I'm going to teach them something, I'm going to tell them to the root of the problem. I'll say things like, it's being popular is overrated. You know, it really is. And once you start, it becomes such a spiral that you just keep going and going and going. And it seems so innocent when you start and it seems fun. And you'll find yourself doing things that you've only seen in movies. And you won't know how you got there until you can sit still. And for most people, that's usually either rock bottom, like in the case of addiction, or prison. That's usually where you finally sit still and get a chance to look back on your life. And why do that when you can avoid all of that? You know, I want to give you advice on how to get into trouble. I'd rather teach, you know, show a young person how to avoid it altogether. And it starts with the need of group affiliation and the need for affirmation. That's where it starts.
Right. Do you think that most people that are in that situation are suffering from low self-esteem? They don't feel good enough about themselves, and that's why they get into these things to try to feel better about themselves? Or is it just money?
I can speak personally for me because I know for some it's money, but that was never my motivation. It's not what I saw. You know, if money was my motivation, I would have made a lot more of it. You know, but it really wasn't. It's power. It's freedom. It's things like that. It's innate elements that, like you said, are missing inside of you or are low. And you do things in order to self-medicate, so to speak. I know a lot of people who have problems with mental issues and psychological issues. A lot of them go to substances to self-medicate, where people who have low self-esteem, things like that, a poor sense, not a good image of oneself, a poor self-image, you do certain things. just the same way. It's almost like self-medicating. You know, the child who doesn't get attention will do anything for it. Or like that old cliche or that old saying, the village that doesn't embrace, a child who's not embraced by the village will grow up one day and burn it down just to feel its warmth. And that's what I did for a long time.
I don't know, Mickey, if you've been following the story of Ghislaine Maxwell, the British socialite, and Jeffrey Epstein, who was convicted. Now she's convicted and may spend the rest of her life in prison. That kind of thing goes on a lot, maybe not at the degree that these two people did it and everything, but tell us what you know about sex trafficking.
A lot. I can tell you that it's all connected. When I talk about the sex trade, sex trafficking is just one element of the sex trade. So when I mention the sex trade, I'm talking all of it, from prostitution to stripping to, let's say, swinger parties, voyeur parties, to pornography, to literally abducting human beings for sexual purposes. It's all in one way or another connected, from the very smallest, most innocent act all the way up to and including literally shipping human beings overseas. And it's literally all connected, not connected strongly, it's loosely connected. And one affects the other equally. I mean, it's all the same. So if we're going just talking about sex trafficking, it depends on what your definition of sex trafficking is. Some people think that pimping and prostitution, a lot of that gets called sex trafficking. And then you have literal traffickers who are literally moving human beings from one state to another or one country to another, actually. So specifically, what would you like to target as far as sex trafficking? Because it's really vast. Well, it's a vast topic.
That's good. I would like to know your ideas on what, if anything, can be done to turn around the sex trade, which the majority of everything that's in it is bad for the people and bad for the country.
Education and awareness. It sounds corny, but it's true. Now, it's hard these days, and I can tell you why, because we're living in such, my words carefully, a thuggish, whorish type of mentality that's really promoted on the internet. I mean, nowadays, you don't have to turn a girl out to be a prostitute. The entertainers have already done that. All she has to do is like you. I mean, it's really bad. It was a select group of people when I was, I'm 50 years old, and a lot of my stories I tell are from my 20s and 30s. It was a lot different then. You had to do a lot of convincing. You had to do a lot of talking. Nowadays, it just seems like the mentality is already there. And it seems, you know how they say one bad apple doesn't spoil the whole barrel? It actually does. If you put one bad apple in a barrel of good ones, you will come back a few days later and find out you have four bad ones. Then bad ones. So it's in a different state now. So as far as changing it, and there's so much money in it, the best thing you can do now is avoidance and education. And I try to tell both sides of the story. You know, I had a lot of fun. I paid a heavy price for it. Was it worth it? No. No. If I turned the clock back, would I have done anything different? Probably not. Because I, too, was not strong enough to resist the temptation and the allure of it. And I don't think, even knowing what I know now, going back, I don't even think I'm strong enough. So you just stay away, like a drug.
Mickey, my most recent book I just finished, and I'll be publishing it on the first day of the year and distributing it. But it's entitled Freedom from Addiction 4, it's the fourth book. The final message. And one of the things that I included in this book was a larger discussion of pornography. And pornography may well be the largest male addiction. addiction in the country. It's amazing what the statistics will tell you about who's watching and who's doing and how much it's making and everything like that. So from an educational point of view, I would really suggest that as soon as this book is published, that you go buy a copy. Now, don't buy my recent book, Freedom from Addiction 3, because the publishers are keeping the royalties and not sending them to me. I think they've gone out of business except for collecting my royalties. So don't buy my present book. Wait on Freedom from Addiction 4. You came through a lot of years, and some of your experiences were different in your early years than in your later years. So one of the story ideas on your media sheet says to ask you about what really goes on at Hollywood celebrity parties.
Oh, gosh, I'm going to, again, choose my words carefully, but the rumors you hear about are true. They are true. It's a lot of cocaine, it's a lot of sex, and everyone is keeping everyone's secret. And I was in a unique position that when party favors ran low, be that people or product, I had to go get it. I said, do you really think those people, when you're in the Hollywood Hills having a party, that someone's going to get in the car, one of those people? I don't want to say any names. I can give hints, but as far as I want to go. One of those people getting in the car and driving to Compton to get another half a kilo of cocaine? No, they don't. There's one guy that goes. He has a foot in that world. He has a foot in the underworld or the shadow world. He goes to get more girls, or if that's what you want. If you want guys, he has access to that too. Whatever you need, he sells. He brings. So it's weird when you're watching certain celebrities on those anti-drug things, and I know what you do because I know what I sold you and I know what I handed you. So you see a lot. You see but don't see. You know, and it's an unwritten rule about keeping each other secret. What you see with going on with Epstein's counterpart, that pretty much goes on everywhere. Not to that degree, and it's only not to that degree because it's not to that clientele. They had beyond celebrity clientele. They had powerful clientele. Sometimes your clientele are bankers, are firemen. A lot of policemen came through my doors. Off duty, not when they came through on duty, but off duty. Because at the end of the day, they're still human beings with vices. So, yes, what you hear about from Corey Feldman and things like that, yes, that does go on. And they're not really parties. The term party you use loosely. It's really just a meet and greet of powerful weirdos, you know, for lack of a better term.
And has that changed any over the years, or is it still going on to the same extent that it was earlier?
I would have to say it's still going on because, as you mentioned in your fourth book, or as you're going to mention in your fourth book, pornography is an addiction. Sex is an addiction. I remember talking to an older man, and I had delivered women to him before. And he was a man of, he's passed away, that's why I say was. He was a man of strong morals and stuff. And I talked to him, I said, all of these things you talk about are correct. But it seems kind of hypocritical coming from you because I've actually brought girls to you. And he was a religious man, and he said, that's different. God sees that differently. And I said, how? And he said, and it was true words. He said, because I'm just an addict. He said, you're a dealer. He said, it's a difference. And I never thought about it that way. Hmm. And that's what I dealt in. I was a sex dealer for over 20 years.
Yeah. Here's an interesting question. Tell us the reason why some black men prefer white women.
Oh, that's for, yeah, that was a book I wrote called I'm Leaving You for a White Woman. It was a story about a guy I knew of that was a teacher. But a lot of people think that the issues are aesthetic issues, and they're not. And what they are is temperament issues, you know, and the way they get along. And it's usually an issue like that. You know, a lot of people want to tell themselves that, like I said, it's not an aesthetic issue. There's no bad guys or good guys in that book. It's just a point of view that a lot of black men have, but we don't have it around black women. It's something you hear, this talk that you hear at the barbershop or in the steam room at the gym, when you can literally hear the truth. And a lot of black men I know that I spoke to, and how we speak in private and in confidence, they feel almost emasculated and abused at home. And they look to something that they appear softer, a kinder, gentler spirit. And that's what that novel is based on. It's actually based on a true story. But the way I write, I don't have any bad or good guy, just different points of view from human beings, you know.
So getting back to low self-esteem, I have thought in the past that perhaps a black man who has a low self-esteem might think that if he were with a white woman, it would elevate his status and his value. Does that strike a chord with you? Does that happen?
That's been spoken before, and that's the most popular thought of it, but is not the common denominator when we speak in private. It really isn't. I mean, men just recently started looking at women from the neck up, honestly, and caring between what's between their ears. That's a new thing. I don't think my grandfather in 1955 really cared about my grandmother's political opinion. I doubt it very seriously, because I knew them both as older people, and it was pretty Walton's traditional, right down to her apron around her waist in the kitchen. You know, so the status thing is, you hear that sometimes, and I've heard that before, but on a large scale, it's usually this new feminist aggressive attitude that black women have taken that seems to be emasculating for black men at home. It might be empowering for her outside the home, but when she brings that attitude into the home, it's not empowering for him, and is detrimental to their overall union.
So you think that might be the primary reason why black men, or some black men, would rather be with a white woman, because black women are becoming more aggressive and their attitudes are demasculating?
Yes, and that's the, when we have these conversations, I wouldn't do it like an interview. I just speak. We just having conversations at the gym. Where, you know, because I usually used to, back then I was going to the YMCA, and that's, it's co-ed, but it's not co-ed steam room and sauna. So you're in the steam room and sauna with all men. And the gym I was going to was pretty much black, and a couple of white, a couple of Latino, but pretty much black gym. And they would use it as a form of therapy. And the guy would sink his head into his hands, start talking about his problems at home. And he would throw it out, what we call in the cipher. He'd throw it out in the middle, and we all pick it apart. And that's usually the consensus. And that's usually the basis of the argument. He doesn't feel respected. He doesn't feel empowered at home. And it's not so much he's running to white women, as opposed to he's running away from black women. So why does he run to the white woman? Well, in America, she's the next closest available. And that's more so of what he's familiar with. I mean, he would run to a Bangladesh woman, but Bangladesh is a little further than, let's say, down the street.
Right, right. Here's another question from your media profile. What women wish men knew about them?
A lot. I can see that what's going on in today's society. It's like estrogen, in its, all of its forms, is widely accepted. Testosterone is so not accepted that the substance that my body produces naturally is actually illegal. Estrogen shots are not illegal. You can get as many as you want. Testosterone shots, however, they are. You can't use them in sports. They're very hard to obtain, but that's a substance that my body produces naturally, and that speaks to a larger scale of how masculinity seems to be under attack. So again, especially in America now, that is so many single parent homes, that a young man growing up with just his mother learns a lot from observation and participation about women. But a young girl growing up without a father in the house, as most single parents are female, interact with them. So it's like we know a lot more about them than they know about us, and a lot of things that we do naturally are not accepting by them, even if you will.
Got it. Do you think that some part of the sex industry should be legalized, and if you do, why?
Yes, I do, because it would be taking a nice veil off of hypocrisy. It makes billions of dollars. I remember when I was in the porn business, we sold more DVDs in places like Kansas, Virginia, North Carolina, Georgia, than we did in places in cities like New York, Los Angeles, Chicago. That's not where a lot of our sales were coming from. They were coming from Middle America and the South, majority of them. We didn't get a lot of orders from New Jersey. There were a lot of orders from Kentucky. A lot of them. Arkansas, another big one. And I think by legalizing or decriminalizing sex workers, because it's a service industry, you will also take away the sex trafficking element, the forcing element. You will remove the violence from it, which is really a problem. You know, you will remove the risk from it, and it would just be males and females, mostly females, but females and males. Like I told people in those pornography films that I used to shoot, it wasn't just women. A guy was in that film, too. So sex workers are both male and female. It'll remove a lot of stigmas from them. And it can be controlled the same way gambling is controlled, the same way medical marijuana is controlled. And, you know, like I know, 20 years ago, you might have 2 ounces of weed. You can get 10, 15 years for that. Well, today, I can legally just walk into a dispensary, buy it, and go home. Nothing. And if the cops pull me over, if it's not open because they treat it like alcohol, and it's sitting there, and it's wrapped up, and I have a receipt from the dispensary, it's not a big deal. You know, so public opinion can be changed if things are done the right way. It's stages to it. The first stage is decriminalization. The second stage is legalization. The third stage is organization, and that's when the outsiders will have a problem. And the fourth stage is unionization. And at that point, it will be looked at just as Roland Adubi is looked at today in California.
Well, things are changing. It's taken a long time, a lot of years, but things are changing, especially with respect to decriminalization.
Yeah, the human mind, I mean, the change and evolution, we have to understand it's, we're evolving, and that's not something that's fast. You know, when you study history, that's a slow process. People have to process things. That this is okay now. And that takes time. That's what public opinion, I mean, you can shock in all public opinion through advertising campaigns, but it really takes some time to get used to the fact that, just like with medical marijuana, that it's okay. Now you can walk down the street smoking, it's not a shocker. But I remember when it first started happening, people didn't even know how to react to someone actually smoking marijuana standing outside. But it takes time. Evolution, evolving opinions take time. I mean, you can look at it as like the racial issues in America. You can't just, okay, slavery's over, now everybody's accepted and equal. No, I understand that changing the mind takes time. You can't have one relationship Friday and expect the relationship to be totally different Saturday morning. No, it takes time. It's like we're getting better at it. And I think accepting sex, like if you look at television in Brazil, the newscasters, and some of these other countries, they're not so sexually repressed. It's not a big deal to see a woman's cleavage on TV. America's getting there. But are we where we were in the 50s? No. But are we at a point now where we can totally legalize the sex trade? No. But we are starting to decriminalize as pornography and things like that go mainstream. We see it's not really that bad. It's not heroin. It's just sex.
Right. Okay, Mickey, this has been a very informative interview, and I'll give you a minute to talk about your books or your website or your marketing, whatever you'd like.
Okay, well, thank you. It has been my pleasure. The Pimp Game Instructional Guide, that's more so like a textbook and gets into the psychology of one person dominating another person just through will alone. And I have two parts to that, the Pimp Game Instructional Guide. Then I have the Pimp Game Secrets of Mind Manipulation, which is going just deeper into it. You know, the influences that language, body language, and things like that have, because it's really, how you look at it, a phenomenal thing. Along for the Ride, that's a novel. That's a story of when I first started and how I got into the life. And it's a murder mystery with thrills and twists to it. And Pimping Ain't Easy, But Somebody Got to Do It. Again, that book has 25 pictures in it. And again, that was in my 30s, about 8 years separating those two stories. And that's what I'm Leaving You for a White Woman, which is totally a different genre. But I wrote that about someone else's story that I found so intriguing. I said, other people have to hear this too, because I know other men can relate to your story. So that had nothing to do with my general genre, but I've been dabbling outside of my genre, and I have a new book coming out now about a boxer who is homosexual and he's forced out of the closet, and his upcoming championship fight tends to be it becomes a political issue. And I thought that would be a nice story, so that was probably, but I'm never going to stray away from, there will be another Pimp Game 3, and because I write what I live, that's mostly my base.
Got it. Your website is MickeyRoyal.com?
Yes, MickeyRoyal.com. And on my website, I sell books and services, because I do a lot of consultation, you know, calls and things like that. So that, too, is on my website, where you can get in touch with me. It's very easy. I'm very accessible.
And
I tell people you can ask me anything.
And you spell Mickey, MickeyRoyal, Royal.
Yeah.
Okay, I got it.
R-O-Y-A-L.
Well, Mickey, it's been nice talking with you today, and you're going to be my last podcast of 2021, and so
okay.
Best of luck, and maybe you'll come back when you got your new book.
Okay, that would be great. I'll let you know, and I'm going to pick that fourth one up from you. It goes along with my subject, too, so I'd love to come back and talk in depth about your book and how it coincides with the things that I've done.
That'd be great.